You're listening to the Today's Wills and Probate podcast, one of the leading sources of information for the wills and probate sector. Don't forget to subscribe and sign up to our free newsletter at todayswillsandprobate.co.uk and follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter.
Hello, welcome along to the latest Today's Wills and Probate podcast. Today, I welcome Andrew Buchan onto the discussion to talk about his role as Managing Director of James Mackenzie Wills. It's great of you to join the podcast, Andrew. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
We're going to talk a bit about the day-to-day life of running a will writing business, talk a bit about some of the challenges that you faced during the pandemic, post-pandemic as well, of course, and we're still at the time of recording, awaiting the outcome of the Competition and Markets Authority investigation as well. So no doubt there's some fertile ground there as well. But in Indeed. The first instance, please, if you would tell me a little bit about yourself and your role, what you do at James Mackenzie.
Yes, sure. Thank you. So my name's Andrew. I'm the director here at James Mackenzie Wills, and I oversee our team of consultants and office staff writing wills, specialising wills, trusts and lasting power of attorneys, effectively. I've been with the company now for nearly 14 years and fortunate enough to see growth upon growth every year in that time. It's just been a really interesting time seeing the company grow in that time. And it's just been a massive change in the industry, what people are now demanding about what we do and how we go about it. And we're not at the end of that yet.
No, I think that much is very obvious. And I think, you know, there's a massive drive to improve the level of information for consumers. The Solicitors Regulation Authority, as an example, are really driving the need for greater transparency. And I think is similarly spilling over into the will writing space as well. Talk in the first instance then about that day-to-day life. Talk to me a little bit about staffing, your volumes, and what coverage you've got as an organisation as well.
We're quite interesting. We've got a split of about half our team are consultants advising, outseeing individuals, providing the advice they require regarding the wills, trusts and powers of attorney. And the back office team is made up of helping support, getting these documents together, dealing with all the administration side of things, but equally growing the business as well. So it's sort of a split half-half as to how our business operates. We cover the UK for wills. So, I mean, to be clear, that's, as we all know, England, Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland, but also we support in Republic of Ireland as well with some of the experts we have. And also we've got our founders and owners are based over in Australia. So we do have some outreach there. Lasting power attorneys are slightly more tricky though. So due to the way they operate, and they operate so differently across the UK, we just write lasting power attorneys in England and Wales presently.
Did a really interesting podcast at the back end of 2023 discussing the differences between England and Scotland specifically. And not just the fact that it's got a whole different vernacular as well. You know, the system is quite different, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, they believe adults are at the age of 16 majority, effectively. In England, it's 18. And we've just changed that to 19 as to when you can statutorily inherit at. So that alone is just one small example. And the more you dig into it, the legal rights of inheriting as a child. And it's just there's greater difference between England and Scotland than there are versus many European countries almost.
You talk about the fact that the business has been through a pretty strong growth plane. How do you go about winning new business? I mean, that's the golden egg for so many will writing organisations and solicitor firms, for that matter.
Yeah, it is. And I'd love to say there's a great answer I could share with everybody as to this is what you've got to do and wow, here's your success. I think for us, it's predominantly sticking to what we do and what we do well. And I imagine every firm will say this, but it's just about providing genuine advice, looking after your people in front of you and just making sure you're creating the value and providing the advice and knowledge that they need. They're coming in to do something, and I think that they do not realize the complexity of the area that we're discussing to them. They might have seen online that you can do this easily, cheaply, without any qualification required. And you can, don't get me wrong, you can, and it will work. But will it work for them individually? And I think sometimes when we have those conversations with the individual, they realize there is a lot more to it than they realized. And when you do something really well, that word spreads. It can spread positively and negatively. Unfortunately, in our scenario, it's proved positive. We specialize a lot more with wills at corporate level, so we are recommended to employees of companies, which means we're dealing with a lot of people that are naturally a lot younger, a lot more earlier in their life. So for us, it's then about providing with that information that's going to work for them now, and what life events they might face, addressing those, and also seeing them through to the end of their life as well, and giving them the advice and guidance that need to be aware of for the future. And some of that obviously resonates with them for their parents, which naturally then means that we're having greater conversations with family members as well, which most people out there would see as referrals. And it's that aspect to think, do something right, and naturally that word spreads. And that's been, dare I say, our golden ticket, doing something well and letting it spread.
I want to come on to training and that sort of whole conversation with the client in just a second, but what about that internal client management cross-sell piece? I mean, that's a really big opportunity for will writing organizations, isn't it? Is that something that you allude to it already, but is that something you recognize as well?
Yes and no. The industry is very interesting. Yes, we work in an area of law, of course. I can see that there is a lot of sales-minded individuals out there. And there's a clear divide between what is a service-driven proposition and maybe a sales-driven proposition. It's very important for us to be able to go in and look after our clients, provide them with the advice and service that they need. And naturally, that will mean making sure that we are protecting in the areas they need to be protected in. And obviously that probably brings about raising awareness to things such as, well, look, you've got sizable assets and they might need protecting for X situation in the future, or that if something happens where you lose capacity, this is going to be an issue for you as well. But equally, we're going in to deliver the service that they've come to us for, and there are opportunities that naturally present themselves for us to talk about those other aspects, but we're very much service driven in what we deliver. So the team that we have, there's no sales targets, there's no need for them to do anything outside of what the clients come to do, because it has to be service first and what they're here for us to deliver for them. And it's a very difficult one to manage, because as I said, I've seen and worked in some firms many years ago that are, you're looking for the route in to do something, but you've got one eye on the other things as well. And that's something as a firm we try to really steer away from.
Interesting to hear you say that. I talked about the fact that we've got this Competition and Markets Authority investigation. We're still awaiting the outcome of that. And I think it's fair to say, I have to be careful how I phrase this, but it's fair to say that there is criticism levelled at the will writing community around that barrier to entry, around that level of qualification and expertise. And you've talked about it there in your own answer. Talk to me about how you manage that within your own organization, what quality controls you've got, how are you making sure that you don't fall foul of this accusation that is leveled at the will writing community?
It's easier when you're an individual, because you have your own morals, you have the belief in what you do, and you can do it well. There's a greater responsibility for me with a team to make sure they are adhering to the levels that I demand of them. But frankly, that's still not enough. There needs to be something else. So for me, it's setting parameters in place that I know that is what my team are delivering. So for me, it's things such as making sure that wherever there is some sort of external qualification out there, I can make sure my team have that qualification. So again, they are being recognized with something that says that they know what they're doing. But again, that's, in my opinion, that's not good enough alone, because you can do something and have a qualification, like we see when you study this as part of a law degree, but to go on and practice it day in, day out is very different. So that's where things like CPD come into it. For me, it's important that my team have regular weekly CPD to make sure we are challenging what we're doing, looking at case scenario, external trainers in, to again making sure that we are constantly understanding what we're doing, how we're doing it, looking at what issues are coming up in the real world, and talking about how they should be identified, how they should be addressed. And again, for me, that's probably also not enough. to have a qualification of some sort and to have continuous CPD, you've got to have responsibility for what you're actually advising and saying. So things such as liability insurance as well, you've got to be responsible for what you're saying to these people. And there's many places out there that don't have that even, don't have that liability aspect. So it's really a case of trying to get all that together. We have that responsibility, we have the qualification, we have the continuous personal development, but also probably there needs to be some body that has a code of practice where people are adhering to that code of practice. And if a consumer wants to be able to identify if that individual is the right person to work with, they can look them up and say, okay, I get that they meet this certain level of standard and they are a safe person to do business with. It's the best that we can do. And those are things that I've made up within my firm that I think the consumer needs. There should be a greater level that says, this is the standard practice that is required.
Regulation is a tricky word when it comes to this topic. I was avoiding that word. Are you an advocate then of regulation? Is it something that we need introduced into the industry?
With regulation, potentially, we have significant cost increases. With qualifications, CPD, that all brings about additional cost increases. Does that then mean that what we're doing, which is something that many people need, are we limiting the availability of this service to people that need this service because they simply cannot afford it? If that's what regulation brings, regulation doesn't work. There needs to be something that still ensures accessibility to the general public. So an element of regulation, I don't know what that looks like. But just simply using word regulation potentially means that you are restricting the market, and that's something that needs to be avoided. People need to be protecting their families, ensuring what they've built up for many years is protected and looked after in the right manner. But if that increases the cost beyond affordability, that regulation doesn't work.
I've not heard it couched in those terms before. I quite like that as a concept, Andrew, because there is this real drive to create access to justice is sort of the phrase, isn't it? But access to legal services is so important. And as you say, so important, you know, particularly in this community. So dare I say that if regulation light or whatever that kind of looks like seems to be for the time being something that isn't going to happen. There's no plan to review reserved legal activities according to the LSB in the immediate future. What does that credibility piece look like? I know you've kind of talked about some of that regulatory side and some of that training side of what you do, but at that sort of higher level, what in your view does that kind of look like?
There's numerous bodies that take responsibility for its members. There's the Society of Will Writers, there's the BEST Foundation, there are plenty of others on top of that. But effectively, there needs to be some body that is arguably the trusted body, or maybe that they come together to agree a certain set of standards that you have to be a member of A, B or C. In addition to that, you need to have an element of qualification potentially, and there needs to be evidence CPD. So maybe together, I think that because all the membership bodies have the right intentions, if there could be a requirement of needing to be an ABC and a certain qualification level combined with the evidence of, you know, we are continuously practicing this and this is how we evidence our training of this, that probably should be sufficient than having to make this a reserve legal activity and throwing overnight many very good advisors out there that don't want to go that path, who at the moment are doing great things out there in the industry, looking after clients in the right way and actually opening up to people who can just tick a few boxes and still do the wrong things.
I find the regulation, qualification, credibility, expertise discussion a little ethereal, if only because at the moment it doesn't seem to be something that is particularly on the government's agenda. But I do see absolutely that the industry has got a responsibility to itself and to its clients to do exactly the things that you've been talking about, Andrew. So whilst it's quite difficult and perhaps a little unfair to put you on the spot around some of this stuff, I appreciate your thoughts and your input on that one. Let's move on. Let's move back to the business and talk a little bit about where you're at now, what happened during the challenges that we faced during the pandemic and how you as an organization coped with that. Because I think there's still this hangover in organizations from the challenges that we faced during the pandemic. So in the first instance, tell me a little bit about what you kind of had to change relatively quickly to manage the impact of the COVID-19 crisis.
Yeah. So we traveled out to see our clients. We went out and saw a lot of our clients. There was a small portion that we saw and looked after via telephone. Teams was invented then, we just didn't use it. And we had our office that were office-based. Pandemic hit virtually overnight. So the office team were very well-versed to just not going out and seeing people. You could speak to people over the telephone and conduct virtual meetings. And you know, Team and Zoom become very, very popular at that point. The office team, of course, they had to go work from home. And we had to make sure they had the tools required to work from home. And then obviously through the pandemic, we were seeing a greater realization maybe that, sounds so cliche here, but life is precious. Anything can happen to me at any time. But that truly had an impact on many people across the country. They needed to get these things sorted out and they wanted to do it now. And as we moved outside of the pandemic, that attitude was still there. People always could see that you never know what's around the corner and I need to protect myself. And I think that's probably for many advisors out there has meant that their business were able to grow because of the ability to reflect upon what's happened in the past. And that's been a key growth tool for our business. I'm sure it's for everybody for what they've been doing going forward. But then I think what we've noticed is the real difference is, yes, people have had more awareness. That's helped us grow, of course, for many firms. But suddenly we were not going out and seeing clients anymore. We were continuously then doing Teams and Zoom meetings. And we almost reverted to a 80-90% Teams and Zoom meeting model. There's nothing better for me than to get out and to speak to someone face to face, if only for the fresh air. But people still don't want that. People would rather be at home, comfortable, and do this in their own personal environment, which does make it a little bit more private. We can do it at the time and that suits them, but an element you lose a bit of the personal element, I feel, when you're not going out and speaking to someone face to face. Maybe some of the emotive cues you pick up on, again, get lost when you are virtually face to face. I mean, I'm moving my hands now, but you probably can't see that. And it's those little elements that when you're face to face in front of somebody, you can pick up. And I think that's something that's been lost since the pandemic, but again, hasn't really impacted the business, so to speak.
So that's driven by consumers rather than by you. They're asking you for video and virtual meetings rather than the in-person meetings.
Yeah, we would always want to make sure that we provide the route that's appropriate for the consumer. So we would happily do a phone meeting, a physical meeting, or a Teams virtual meeting as we're speaking now. What we tend to see is the consumer are a lot more willing to do a Teams or Zoom meeting than they are meeting face-to-face, which was the polar opposite of what we saw pre-pandemic.
One of the things that has been said to me about the impact of Zoom meetings, as an example, was that order values went down significantly because you weren't able to articulate, as you say, some of the challenges that you might have by, you know, just doing a will or, you know, just doing an LP, something like that. Is that something you found?
Not ever so. I guess making a cup of tea and asking somebody about how their travel and weather was for that day, if that's going to mean that that's what refers their family member onto me, probably we're doing something wrong. So I don't think we've really seen that happen. I still firmly believe that if you're good enough and if you're providing the right advice and you're spending the same amount of time with the individual, as long as they're not doing something in the background, which again is something that occasionally can be seen where someone is not fully engaged with you, that is one element of risk. But generally, I haven't really seen much of an impact there. I still feel that if you apply yourself the time and you are fully engaged with them, the same outcomes are being achieved.
What is the appetite that you see for things like online wills? Is that a topic that comes up regularly with yourselves? I guess perhaps if they've already engaged with you, they've discarded that concept, perhaps.
The world that we live in now, things are driving more towards online. Of course, that's people look on online for everything these days. So online wills is generally going to be something that is naturally going to grow anyhow. And I don't have a problem with that overall, because the more people that can have access to solving the solution that they need, that's a good thing. It has to be. It's just the way that is positioned, because if somebody enters an online route and they're being told, you don't need a professional to do this, you don't need any qualification to do this, we can do this with you in 5 or 10 minutes for a low cost fee, and they can. But where does that sit with effectively selling paper to providing an advice or service? And the problem is only going to arise long after those 5-star reviews on Trustpilot, 30 years down the line, when that person subsequently dies and something that they thought was going to happen doesn't happen because something was not advised to them, was not made aware to them. They've put some names in the boxes, and beyond the basic red flags that that online system pulls up, a lot of other things can fall apart now or in the future. The route needs to be there, but I think there needs to be an amount of qualification. And what I mean by that is not necessarily a physical qualification by the individual, but a qualification of what we're actually, what that online service is dealing with when they're providing that service to that individual.
It seems as though I can't have a conversation about online or tech without referring to artificial intelligence and the impact it might have on the will writing community. And of course, you know, there is already some evidence that ChatGPT, as an example, is simply unable to write a will at the moment. That might change in the future. But what's your view on the impact of tech and potentially of artificial intelligence on the community?
I mean, I'm sure we've all played with it, and it's great. It's like when there's a new app on your phone, you download it, and it's a new toy for a period of time, and you have a lot of fun with it. And there's numerous songs that I've written using ChatGPT and had a great time doing it. And then when I start to reflect upon my day job, is it going to benefit me? Is it going to take over from me? It becomes quite interesting. And I think that AI can take an instruction. You've got to put information into it. That's the instruction, and I think it can produce a will. What it's not going to do is it's not going to deal with it in the emotive way that's required of what we do in this industry. There's been dozens of times when I've spoken to clients and they've said something, and the way they've said it just leads into that next question. How many children do you have? Well, two. The answer's two. But we know there's something else there. Are we leaving everything to your siblings? Most of them. And the quick question would be, well, which ones? But actually, the most of them tells you there's a story there. That's the stuff that the AI can't pick up yet and won't know where to go down the avenue. And when we're dealing with things that are so personal, I think we're a long way from AI being able to do what we do in a sufficient capacity.
The AI conversation is not one, a little bit like regulation, that we're going to solve in the course of a 30-minute podcast. I guess the thing that I sort of see the opportunity with AI is really identifying where we can harness it. It has a role to play. There's absolutely no two ways about that. In our daily lives as much as in our working lives. But it's about finding the right way to harness it. And I agree with you. It isn't in that nuance of meeting somebody and writing the will. But I think there are other avenues that we still need to explore as AI develops. But it's been great to have you on the podcast. As I say, we're not going to do it justice over the course of half an hour. And I really, really appreciate you coming on, Andrew, and sharing some of your insights and your expertise as well.
Thank you very much, David. Thank you very much for your time.
Today's Wills and Probate podcast is available on your preferred podcast provider. It's also available on todayswillsandprobate.co.uk. My thanks to Andrew. Thank you as ever for listening, and we'll see you again soon.
You're listening to the Today's Wills and Probate podcast, one of the leading sources of information for the wills and probate sector. Don't forget to subscribe and sign up to our free newsletter at todayswillsandprobate.co.uk and follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter.